from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the GoodAtheist.net podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Krissa Hendricks.
And before we start the show, I want to put a message out there because I released bonus show 100 just on last Thursday, or if it was a Friday, I forget which day. Anyways, I forgot to mention it was 100, and I promised that I was going to make big deals out of 100s. I've gone back and was like listening to some shows to try to make the best of. Well, I don't want to say best of Good Atheist, because that's the wrong way of putting it. I want to find the shows, the seminal shows, 25 shows you need to
essential listening.
Hear. Yeah, the essential shows.
I think that'd be great, because I remember being an early listener, and it took me a while to pick up on all the little jokes, all the little things, the run-on stuff, and just get a good sense of your personality. I think it would be awesome to do, like, a best-of series. Or not a best-of series.
Exactly. Can't be the best
yeah.
of. It must be the essentials.
The essential listening. Essential listening.
The essential listening. I don't know. That sounds like kind of Turner Classic Movies. The essential listening. I'm like, can't we just say the essentials? You know, because I like it because it sounds like a comic book thing.
The Atheist Essentials?
The Essentials.
All right, I like that.
It's like you got to listen to the essentials.
Pick a few off the top of my head that would have to be in it.
Which would be?
Abortion Van.
Right, the Abortion Van one.
Abortion Van.
I don't
van
even
one.
Remember which one that first came out in.
I don't know, but you that's definitely a run-on thing.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
That's important.
The Santa Claus episode, because I have that.
Isn't that the first one you and I ever did?
No, actually, I was talking about Santa episodes as episode 14.
Whoa.
I know.
Is that one 14. Good?
It's okay.
So we
3 out of 5 stars. Mm. I was thinking about maybe making a collage mashup of some of the parts that make sense. But this was back when I wasn't really that animated, and I was a boring guy saying, like, okay, well, let's talk about that. I wonder. I mean, this is an interesting thought, man, and you must present it in an interesting way, or it will fail.
Yeah.
It will fail. Well, so what else is there, though?
I think probably some of the Bible stories would be essential.
I suppose so, yeah. I'd probably include the Moses trilogy there,
mm-hmm.
just to make it real simple for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still going to ask some people who are listeners of the show if they want to get in touch with me, either on Facebook or Twitter, or even my email, jacobforte@gmail.com, or jake@thegoodatheist.net, whatever you wanted to send me, get in touch. And say, like, you know, for instance, if you're interested in finding the 25 shows you think that people should listen. Because there's a lot of shows now. I just mentioned bonus 100. Shit, that's
yeah.
the bonus shows. And
it's
now
a lot.
I'm like, it's getting so bad that I'm forgetting what number shows it is. Because I'm like, is it 176? Is it 167? I don't even remember. This is 167, by the way. I know this because I had to go look a couple times. Starting to learn, but you know, it's kind of getting back in the flows of regular podcasting, which I'm sure everybody is hopefully psyched about. And like I mentioned, episode 100, which is a very vitriolic sort of gay rights one.
Yep, yep.
Yeah, that one. Sort of. That's if you like last show's passion, you'll enjoy that because that's the residualness of that week's pissed offness. And why wouldn't we be pissed off? Because we're still waiting for internet. Oh, waiting for internet.
I wouldn't be so pissed if we weren't supposed to get it. Okay, so the story is that we had the technician scheduled to show up on Sunday, and we do not have our buzzer working. So rather than doing what I thought they would do, because this is what I would do if I was a technician, going to people who have just moved into their apartment building, there's a note right above the buzzer in our building that says, buzz 22 for the manager, right? Or he could have buzzed anyone to let him into the building, and then we were there all day. He could have come knock on our door. But instead, the message is basically the minute he was supposed to show up, that message came in. And I have a message from the technician saying, well, I buzzed, and you guys aren't there, so I guess no one's home, and you'll have to call this other number to reschedule.
It's like, thanks for having a lot of gumption there. We really appreciate that, Internet Man. We're still waiting for our internet man.
Yep. So I sent in messages, and they're still working on rescheduling when the man is supposed to come back. And I guess what I'll have to do is, in the 3 or 4 hour time period when they're supposed to show up, I'm going to have to go wait in the lobby for him. Because apparently, they're not clever enough to figure out, hey, if I buzz someone else and say I'm a technician, I can go and knock on their fucking door!
Yeah. Well, let's just say, but you know what? Here's the truth. I mean, think about this entire building. How many wireless networks are there? There's so many, right? Do we all need to be paying for that internet? No, it's because we can't trust each other. Really, what we should be doing is going to a neighbor, knocking, saying, here's $10. Let us use your fucking router for a few days if we really had some fucking gumption and if people could trust one another. But do you think that we can trust some of these people? Do you think that they would accept that deal? I have a feeling they kind of look at you nicely and be like,
That was the deal I actually had in my last apartment, now that I think about it. I shared the internet with the people next door to me. They came and knocked on my door and asked, and I was like, yeah, cool.
Well, then you're sort of like one of the new people. We should find people like us. Share in the goodness, because until then, the internet man is a dick. He's a dick. He doesn't show up when he needs to, because he's like, other people fucking need me. And that's fucking frustrating, and talk about realizing how much you need the internet when it's not there. Mm. This is week, what, 2 now?
We are starting week 2 of no internet in the house. So we get internet basically at an hour at a time, either at the coffee shop or their library. And it is horrible.
Horrible.
I don't even realize how much I'm a product of the information generation until we didn't have internet. And I keep... There's just these impulses I have, that these natural impulses, such as I'll think of something and I'll go, oh, I really want to hear that song. I'm going to go on YouTube. Oh, wait, I can't. Or a question and I want to Google it and I won't be able to. Or, you know, I just, the thoughts I have, oh, I wonder, oh, that's the name of a plant. I wonder what that plant looks like. I should look it up. You can't do any, you have no idea how many transient thoughts you look up in a day until you can't do it at all. Oh my God.
Well, that's still a very unique experience, because you know what? And this is kind of the funny thing, because there's 7 years that separate us, right? And that's not a long time for, you know, for a couple. I mean, it's pushing the limits of gross, but but yeah, I think we're still within that really good time frame. But in that time frame, being children of the information age, such a huge difference. Now, I joined the online world really at the beginning when I went to college, because I couldn't afford a computer. It's too poor to afford one. And, you know, we were just talking about the other day of sharing music and the way that sort of even my generation had to sort of like when the early beginnings of copying music, where they'd go to the library to make, you know, they'd find a CD that they liked, because that was the only place where you could actually find stuff. There was A, no internet for you to go, B, no method of really searching and finding what you were looking for. But even when you did, the prohibitive cost of being on the internet at the time was pretty huge. There was an initial investment that was pretty big on, you know, the computer itself. Like, holy shit, they used to be really expensive.
But I think you and I have different perspectives for more than just the reason that we're 7 years apart. I think I also had a big jump on the whole internet thing because my dad was a computer technician and a DJ on the side.
It's true.
So when I wanted, you know, in junior high school, in late elementary school, we were burning CDs for my Discman with all my favorite music on it. I was making CDs for other kids in the class, and I was super I remember there was a bus strike when I was in I think it was elementary school, late elementary school, and there was a bus strike. And one of my friend's moms decided, because we lived close to her, decided to pick me up and drive me to school every day. So as a thank you, I asked her for a list of her favorite songs, and I asked her daughter for a list of their favorite songs, and we burned them each a CD. And at the time, that was a huge deal to do that. Like, to make them these compilations was, like, nobody did this. And at the time, CDs were still pretty expensive. It was $5.
You give a mixtape to someone you want to have sex with. Realize this?
Well, I was in elementary school. It was a thank you.
That's just how it used to be, though. Mixtapes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That was like, I made you a mixtape because I thought about all the songs that make me think about you.
Yeah.
It's like you know what it is? It was the poor man's way of stealing somebody else's poetry to make you look good. That's what it was.
I didn't have any of that in my generation. If somebody would have burnt me a CD, I would have laughed at them. Are you kidding? What am I supposed to do with this? I have all these songs, you idiot. Like,
well, you know, you got connected really early on to the fucking Library of Alexandria, my dear.
Mm-hmm.
And to be disconnected from it for just even a moment. I mean, for me especially, I feel my information withering away. There's tons of things that I just need to be aware of on a daily basis.
I mean, you and I have been trapped in some tiny spaces. I mean, over the last year, we have rented rooms. We have been
slept on couches.
We have had little to no space, but I have not felt so imprisoned as I do now, and it's entirely because of the internet. There's something about having that window out into the infinite nature of the world that makes that I could sleep in a closet and feel great about it because I have a window to look out at the world and talk to my friends and, you know, do work and figure out what's going on. But here, I mean, if we want to watch a movie, we have to go to the library and pick something up.
Yeah, it's a good thing I look, and you've got to look hard at the library for good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I managed to find a couple ones. I finally got to show Carissa Amadeus because that was before her fucking generation. She totally missed the boat on that one. There was nothing like having a movie like this that you'd just sort of catch on TV. You didn't even know what it was, but you're bored, and you watch this. I mean, imagine your surprise. It's like finding a fucking pot of gold here.
It was excellent. We watched it twice, actually, in the last couple of days.
And the fucking making of.
And the making of. And we're watching the director's cut, so that's 3 hours.
We watched it twice, and it's 3 hours.
Yep.
Great movie, though. But, yeah, so we have this sort of natural frustration, but we recognize in that frustration that the internet is an awesome place, which leads us to the very first topic of the show that we're finally getting to. Yeah, I know, there are topics in the show that
we're like religion. Thought we were just going to ramble on about...
No, we have to placate people who like this kind of talk, because, you know, we will go on ramblings, but we should always maintain ourselves to be true to the source material, which is still the good atheist. So we'll talk about the way that religion does fucked up shit, because that's also part of someone's day. So we got a nice little story there about how we miss the internet. But there's a group of people that, ultra-Orthodox Jews in New York, that were wondering to themselves, is the internet a bad thing? Should we ban the internet?
So no.
They decided...
The answer's no.
They decided to have a big meeting, all right? Now, there were some 40,000 people that showed up. Well, that's what they were expecting. But there were so many more that came that they had to rent a nearby stadium to accommodate those people as well. There were probably something close to 60,000.
That's unbelievable.
And here's the thing. There's a little bit of a weird irony here. Because the company that sponsored this has ties to an online company that sells kosher products. Yeah, and at the event that's there to question the internet, they're handing out flyers for free apps.
So I'm getting the impression that this company pretty much already assumes what the answer is going to be.
Yeah, well, obviously, here's the thing. I mean, imagine you're like a savvy businessman, right? Now, you know that this is an issue that people are discussing, so you're like, let's have a fucking rally, and let's force every rabbi to send everyone they know there. Because the way it works in Judaism, ultra-Orthodox Judaism, if you want, is that, I mean, it's difficult for me to call, like, say, are they Hasidic Jews? Well, they're not all Hasids. They have their own names. They follow rabbis, right? Like superstars. They're obsessed about these people. When a famous rabbi comes to town, everybody's trying to be like, look at him. And it's weird. It's their pop stars. And these people have a lot of fucking power. So when these pop stars tell you to go someplace, you're going to go. Because to everybody else, it looks like 60,000 people of a community, right? But no one there knew each other.
Oh, yeah, I remember
everybody's
reading that in the article.
Everybody's a fucking stranger. Yeah, that's just because they're a really isolated bunch, like super isolated. So although to us, outsiders, it may appear like, wow, look at that, 60,000 people in unity. Well, first of all, there is no unity. There's some cognitive dissonance going on right at the fucking start here, where an online company is distributing flyers at an event questioning the internet. And everybody's reaction there, too, is kind of weird, right? Like, you got, obviously, younger people who are going to say, I can't not have this thing.
Well, and business people as well, thinking, oh, you know, if we end up deciding here, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people went in there, especially business people, thinking if they decide that we're not doing the internet a thing anymore, I'm going to have to either fundamentally change my business or fundamentally change my beliefs. That's a big deal.
I suppose so. But I think that the way that everybody felt about it, because, I mean, the way they were talking about the internet is like, it brings out the worst in us. And, you know, what was the other message? I'm trying to remember. Anyways, it doesn't matter. So they're basically still, shitting on it. The very conservative rabbis are obviously going to hate it, especially if they're part of that generation that never really went on. But, you know, there's two things that are important. One is that young people are fucking connected to shit, mm-hmm. and you can't get them off. And two, there's money to be made, and every fucking person on this earth wants to make money. And as soon as you're like, yeah, this thing that everybody's addicted to can make you millions, yeah. You're just like, excuse me?
So in the end,
have different opinions.
What was decided?
Nothing, of course, because no one can agree. All they could agree on was that the internet was a scary fucking place. Well, duh, it can be scary. Yeah, the temptation of information. That's fucking scary. But, you know, like anything else, they've got their ways around it. Like, for instance, if you go to one of their internet cafes, sites are restricted and they monitor what you're looking at. That's religion for you right there. Mm-hmm. Monitoring what you're looking at. Yep. Making sure that it's only for business. Don't you be looking at the temptation of anything else, like music that isn't just boring ass fucking Yiddish crap. Like, I remember reading in Deborah Feldman's book there, Unorthodox, where she's just like, you know, for her, the attraction to writing is just simply because the rest of, you know, like the religious writings that they get to read, boring, unimaginative, crappy. They have no fucking humanity to them. Their shit's not interesting. That's the big realization for them. And I could see them being afraid of the internet because they're like, oh, it can infinitely provide different ideas and information for you. In perpetuity.
And we can't control it. You know, it's completely... Oh, yeah. I mean, we've said it 1,000 times and we'll say it again. The internet is the wild, wild west. Anything goes. It is hard to rein it in. It's hard to know what's going on in the little seedy underbelly. You know, the internet is anything you want it to be. There are some amazingly awesome programs and there are some scary, scary things going on.
Oh, yeah. It is a fucking weird little environment of its own. And, you know, the thing that's really unique about the internet, and I joke about an article that I wrote about, this whole debating the internet nonsense, was saying, like, it's kind of like being against the printing press on crack. Because, you know, the thing about the printing press was that it really did allow, at least at the beginning until the, you know, copyright came along, it really allowed anybody to just pick up a printing press and just start printing your own shit.
But it's not just about the spread of information, and I think that's where people get stuck. The web is not just about the spread of information. The thing about the printing press is we had one-way communication.
It's true.
The thing about the internet is that, yes, anybody can say anything they want, but anybody else can talk back to you, and we're also sharing things like music and inspiration and video
and
photos and comments.
Those are really important now, comments.
And apps and technologies and information to build new technologies, right? I mean, I think for me, the spread of that kind of stuff is the most impressive thing about the internet. Think about all the open source software that allows, I mean, you and I can do so much just on open source software, never have to pay a penny, never be expected to pay a penny. And we can run, you can build websites off of that, you can do design work, you can do video editing, you can do image editing, anything you want, just based on these open source programs. So to say it's like the printing press is to look at it basically through a keyhole.
A tiny keyhole. But I mean, I was joking that it would be as archaic as that, because you're right. I mean, like I said, on crack, on super duper crack,
on crazy insane crack.
Yeah, as I think that's really the big difference when it becomes not just a one way communication, but now suddenly an interaction. I have to imagine that it is as potent as the bacteria fusing with another bacteria that produces energy. You know, like the foundation of all organic life, is one of like this kind of two-way communication that happened. I'm like, revolution, revolution.
And there's something else interesting happening with the internet. You remember that book that you made me read, Committed by...
Oh, yes, that's right.
You forced me to read that thing.
Yeah, what I was forcing you to read that. Wasn't that part of my whole marriage inception thing?
Probably.
Yeah.
Anyway, but in the book, it talks a lot about how she's just basically trying to argue for the idea that marriage is subversive. And the part of it that's subversive is that the church and governments cannot regulate what happens in private conversations in people's homes. And that's sort of...
scary.
That's sort of scary. I think that there's a lot of that happening on the internet, too. Because, yes, there's a lot of public communication. There's a lot of open commenting. There's a lot of that. But think of how much private messaging is going on the internet. Think of how many private conversations...
Think all the dirty things that are being sent to people in complete secret.
That's not what I meant.
That's what you
meant. I'm not talking chat roulette style. I'm talking about... I'm talking about things like Anonymous. Like Anonymous having online meetings and all these secret meetings and all these secret things that happen online that allow us to extend that private conversation we have with our partners and create these private networks with people in Hong Kong, with people all over the world, right?
Well, I was thinking, actually, that every time I'm trying to organize interviews or things like that, I always have that tough position, be like, what's your time zone? You know, it's kind of like I wish everyone had that thing in their messages now. This is my time zone.
That's not a bad idea.
Because I feel like this is a new complication that arises, that there's tons of people who I'd like to connect with, but because we don't have a really commonly understood time zone that we can share once in a while, or open windows of communication in those time zones, I feel like I'm still, you know, the lines of communication are still too slow. It's when it becomes much more instant that it becomes much more powerful. You know, like that's why kind of chat programs, that's why like Twitter is much more powerful than email. Email's slow now. Email's like the old days of like, oh, I sent you an email. Why didn't you just communicate with me instantly on these other networks that I'm constantly on? And you know, that's. Oh my God. This is disturbed. We must talk to someone about that.
Yeah.
It's disturbed. The sink is making weird, bubbly, gross noises
as
soap comes back up. It vomits soap, this
There's
thing.
There's so much to talk to the landlady about in this apartment.
Well, you know, my favorite part of living downtown is the crazy homeless people that you sometimes meet.
They're really crazy.
They're really crazy.
That is, wow, crazy.
Yeah. They're special crazy. The yellers. Yeah. You know, I fear the yellers because they always seem mad. What? No one's yelling happy. No. I was so happy I was yelling. No.
It's been pretty scary downtown. But I think I'm right to say that that's a temporary thing.
Yeah, you mentioned before that the important Calgary Stampede pushes the homeless people out. I'm like,
out
that
of downtown.
Familiar.
It's true. That's what happens. It's not very PC, but that's exactly what they do.
Let's displace poverty. Let's do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so going back to what we were talking about before, because we went on a tangent. I want to rein it back just a little bit because we were just talking about the internet in general and sucking the internet's dick a little bit and saying, like, how amazing is this thing? And it's wonderful. And, of course, we're scared of it.
Oh, I mean, yeah, it's terrifying.
It's fucking terrifying.
How many times has your site got hacked?
Too many to count.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is that, you know, most sites only start getting hacked once you reach a certain number and certain success. Every level of success brings with it new challenges because the internet is AIDS in many respects.
The internet isn't AIDS. It has AIDS.
It has AIDS.
And yeah. It gives it to us on our websites. And sometimes it's not fixable. It's very sad.
Yeah. There are sites that can die. That can happen.
Yeah.
Hopefully, you know, you're not one of those sites. But that's what's called a backup.
Just constantly backup, which I just realized I haven't done in, like, months. I mean, don't hack me. Was that an open invitation? Please don't hack anything I do. Oh, my God.
Now, one of the things that was interesting about this discussion whether or not they should be still on the internet, there were other Jews there in the parking lot, or so, even non-Jews, that were actually having a protest of their own. Because there's a bit of news that doesn't get talked about much especially in those religious communities, which is probably much more serious than having a fucking rally about whether or not the internet is good, okay? Mm-hmm. Rather, they should have actually been talking about the fact that there's a lot of child abuse that's happening in that community, and like every secret of a community, the information's not coming out.
Okay, I don't know if child abuse is the right way to put this.
Okay, I'm sorry. Child rape.
Child molestation.
Molestation and rape.
And rape. Yeah. Child abuse, I feel, is not quite as the same.
It's not potent enough. Should rephrase that.
Child abuse feels like you left your kid in the car with the windows rolled up while you went shopping at Safeway. Molestation's a bit more serious.
That is very true. That is very true. And basically what's really going on behind the scenes is that at the same time that they're having this stupid rally, there's essentially been a lot of talk, and this has come out from the New York Times, which wrote really a lot of pieces about this, because this is one of their issues. They're like, there's a lot of fucking molestation that's not going...
Not being reported.
It's not being reported. Not just that, but they were actually complaining about the district attorney, all right, whose name is Chris Haynes. Oh, Hines. Hines. Mr. Hines. And Hines has been cozy with the ultra-Orthodox Jews for a really long time. In fact, that's how he got elected. All right, he was able to kind of like... You know, he likes to describe himself as the only, you know, running Jew for candidacy. Like, he's a Jew wannabe. So he just goes around being like, I know more Yiddish than most of these people. Ha ha, look at me. While I am not part of your belief system, I am totally placated to you. Vote for me. And they vote in record numbers because the same way that they got 60,000 people to show up at a fucking rally where no one knew each other, everybody's going to vote the way that they're told. And you can just win if you have them on your side, because that's how organized they are. Oof. So now they're basically under pressure to get the abuse reported. He creates an organization, which is basically kind of like a hotline where people can call and stuff like that. It's called Zedek. It's called the Voice of Justice in Hebrew. And it's kind of like a hotline where you can call and try to bypass having to talk to your rabbi. Because basically the rabbis were telling the district attorney, saying like, well, we'll report to you if we think there's credible instances of abuse.
Well, it's not just that. It's that they were telling, I don't know if the right word's congregation, maybe.
I don't think so.
Jewish congregation?
Maybe. We'll just go with that for now.
That,
I got no internet to fact check you on that one.
Yeah, exactly. it's well known within the congregation that...
Stop using that word.
Your responsibility is to tell your rabbi if there's been some kind of sexual assault, and that they will decide whether or not it's good enough to go to the district attorney. And they were talking in some of the news reports about how, if you just tell your rabbi, even if that's all that happens, you're going to get in trouble for even just reporting it. You're going to get in trouble for being molested. So, of course, most stuff is going unreported. And then the stuff that is getting reported, now we have a second step of the rabbis get to decide whether or not they're going to report that. So this whole hotline was meant to kind of get around that bullshit.
Well, and now they claim to have had some successes. For instance, they say that they've had like about 120 arrests, but amidst those numbers has been accusations that they're just inflated, because a number of them, when again the New York Times checked it out, had found that it was these were abuse cases that had been reported through third parties. So an Orthodox Jewish man had put his penis on a woman's shoulder, and that she had reported him. So that's they counted that as one of their, arrests and convictions. Meanwhile, you're like, that has nothing to do with your program. Now, it gets more fucked up than this, because his liaison, all right, to the community, is married to the lawyer that often defends people who are themselves molesters. Like, there was a case of a guy called David Zimmer, and Zimmer was essentially, he had molested a bunch of kids. He didn't even get jail time. He got probation, which seems to be the kind of MO for all of these child molesters. All of them are getting probations, practically. And then the hope was like, oh, well, maybe he can get rehabilitated. Well, he worked as a locksmith. So he was breaking into people's homes and right back to fucking where he started, if not worse, if not more fucking committed. Because, hey, guess what? Probation for you. Jeez, you're going to learn your lesson, eh? So, you know, this is an instance where even the fucking prosecutor has decided to not release any of the names of any of the accusers, even if convicted.
So where does the justification come in where if you are an average citizen, even I'm actually surprised that the Catholics haven't come out and gone, why don't we get the same treatment? We rape kids all the time.
Yeah, I think that
we
could
really
you
use
be their
this.
PR person, I think.
So. I don't know. But how do they justify the fact that there's no other secular group, there's no other religious group getting that kind of treatment, but this group, it's totally justified to get that kind of treatment where, oh, you know, people, you can go around and get a lighter treatment and you can get out on probation and your name isn't listed, so you don't have to register as a sex offender or any of this hoopla that is there for a reason.
Well, I mean, all the other ones did get their chance. It's just that they really, you know, they're more numerous. So there were probably so many more examples of it. You know, think about it, just even in South America, Messier Macio, this one guy molested 1,000 children. 1,000 kids were molested by one man.
See, this, I can take this, I want to take this back to that whole discussion about the internet being evil. Here's the problem. Some people do just really fucked up stuff. And when you have a platform to share and indulge in what you're passionate about, some fucked up people are going to be sharing and indulging in what they're passionate about. And apparently for some of those people, it's molesting thousands of kids. Yeah. Oh my God.
It's like NAMBLA. You know, I remember I went on the site wants to find out what's their justification. How do they justify it? Because here's what they call. They call it man-boy love. This is how they frame it. They're like, man-boy love has been around forever and it's beautiful. Beautiful man-boy love. And you're just like, no, sir. You are fucking these people up. And they actually get so fucked up that they continue this abuse. A lot of them be like, what? Yeah, that's right. You see, behaviors that are kind of forced on other people become their behavior, especially when it's tied into sexuality. Some really fucked up shit can happen. That's why you don't do it. That's why you let people try to have as, you know, sort of like a painless, a sexual fucking, you know, entry into the world, because sometimes those can leave some scars. You know, they leave scars because so much of your emotion is involved. And emotion is a powerful tool in memory. So those things are going to be strong, have strong associations. And over time, over those patterns, you know, you can see how, like, there could be some serious fucking, what I would call, I mean, I hate this word, deviancy. But deviancy for me, as far as it's concerned, is when harm is being done to another human being without their fucking consent. That is fucking indecent. And I don't care what moral framework you have, right? Conscious individuals have the right to make decisions about what happens to them, and you don't have the right to take that away. That is what I would say is definitely its definition, but, you know, I guess somebody could debate me, especially somebody from NAMBLA who's like, no, you don't understand. You have to work up to man boy love, or who knows what. Who knows what?
Maybe we'll get another email from our friend, the animal lover.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
I don't know how to put it so that it's more understanding.
Yeah.
Bestiality is such a harsh term.
What's harsh about it?
I don't know. That it makes me uncomfortable to
say. Yeah. Yeah. For those of you that don't know, because you're probably new listeners, a number of years ago, I got an email from someone who claimed that I understood their plight as someone who was having sex with animals and felt that that was okay. And I'm like, what part of my speech has ever given you that impression?
That would be actually good. You should have responded and said, hi, what did I say that made you think that I was cool with animal sex?
Yeah, but here's the thing. I assume that if you're worse off making that two-way communication,
right,
than just saying, you know what, it's like any other email you sent to a person, they didn't respond because they didn't know who you were. And why did you, like, I have to maybe... Here's what I admire. The bravery. There's bravery. But, you know, of course, I didn't even know how to respond. I did not know how to respond because I don't want to have to tell someone that they shouldn't be fucking their dog or whatever other animal they have that they're having sex with. I don't care if you're saying the dog likes it. That's the same thing that fucking people who molest kids say, actually. They say, oh, it likes it. Yeah, well, you know what? Nobody had a choice there. No one had a choice. The only person that had a choice was you, and you made that choice. And, you know, you should seriously question it when you don't have any fucking consent. And something's wrong with you at that point. You know, that is where the so much of that violation is tied up, in the loss of power, in the feelings of shame and powerlessness. Like, holy shit, that is really disturbing.
So if you had to make a prediction, just to kind of rein us in conversationally,
if you had
to make a prediction about these two stories, where do you think it's going to go? Like, are the ultra-Orthodox Jews going to make some limitations against? I mean, obviously, if they held a rally of this size, there is some interest in maybe banning it, making it the pork of technology or whatever. And also, what do you think is going to happen about the special treatment that the ultra-Orthodox Jews are getting in terms of dealing with child molestation?
See, that's a tough one, because I think that as one of the last remaining extremely insular communities, they could continue this trend for much longer than a lot of the other mainstream religions, which were forced to be much more modern.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these people have not been forced to do so. Their entire philosophy is, in fact, to disconnect themselves from the world. They are, you know, ultra-Orthodox Jews are very much a response to the insanity of the Second World War. You know, they responded with their own form of insanity, of saying, well, the world will never accept us. They keep on trying to kill us. Therefore, let's separate ourselves from the world, because it must be itself evil. You know, it's like the whole reason why, and so much of it is so fucked up, too, with some Hasidic Jews being like, yeah, the Holocaust was punishment for us. Yeah, that's totally justified. I mean, the way they've handled this trauma is not exactly the fucking healthiest. Let's isolate ourselves from the world. Now, the cool thing about the internet is that makes that impossible. You know, with this whole weak-ass, cold Zedek program that doesn't seem to be doing shit, well, at some point, when it's a little bit better connected, where all of a sudden we've broken through the wall because the internet is just getting more sophisticated, where now it's not just you typing on stuff. It's like there's probably some degree of it that's going to be incorporated in your own fucking body, for God's sakes. You don't think that with the advent of Google Glasses, as an example, that you have Google contact lenses, or maybe just it's kind of like permanently part of you, you're just navigating on it?
But you think they're going to accept that into their society? I mean,
I'm saying that they're not going to have a fucking choice. I'm saying that because the technology becomes so easy to hide and so integrated into humanity that there is no way for you to actually detect that anymore. It's just so clandestine that they can't know. I mean, a good example is that the whole rally, they're like, well, we're going to broadcast this, is the internet good thing, via internet.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, we're not going to make it available for other people. But as soon as you put it on the web, guess what? It's out there for everybody else to see. Because you can't hide that shit from anybody. It'll get cracked. Of course it got cracked.
I don't think they can. I honestly think that they have two options. They can decide to outlaw and make it the pork of technology and basically slowly wither and die as an organization, because there's just going to be too many people who realize the advantages, and they're just not going to be willing. There'll be another sect that pops up that's a little bit more lenient about that kind of thing, that we're gonna have this division in terms of their that religious group.
Well,
I don't think there's a choice.
In the way that the community is, remember when a lot of these people are saying, I don't know anyone at this rally, because their circle's very small, and like any small circle, it's filled with drama. You don't normally, you know, you feel isolated because you try to get away from it, so you can't be yourself, you can't talk to people, you can't open up. In a way, you can only do that with strangers sometimes, and the internet is full of strangers willing to listen and forget about all of those things when it's gone. But by the time you feel like you've been listened to, that you found other people that take away your loneliness, holy shit, like, that is a big erosion. Isolation is a fucking prison. It is a prison that religion uses to prevent other people from finding like-minded individuals that will excite them, ignite them, make them think about other things other than the glory of God.
I don't think we realize what a terrible, terrible prison isolation can be until this week we've suffered without the internet.
And we're together. It's not like you're alone. Imagine if you were alone in the apartment. be slowly going mad.
I would be legitimately going crazy. You know what's funny? I actually picked up from the library this audiobook on Google, about Google. But I haven't listened to it because I'm afraid that it would be like watching a cooking show for a starving person. You know, I'll be listening to all these great things that Google did without the ability to actually look any of it up or play on Google or anything. And I feel like this audiobook would just make me even more upset. So I haven't listened to it despite the fact that it looks really awesome. But
well, we got to return to the library soon, so you better fucking read it.
I know. No, the audiobook to get, you have like 3 weeks.
Oh, yeah? Okay, cool. Because I was going to say, like, let's get on that. Let's get on that. We got to return these or else we're going to get late fees.
We don't want late
fees. We don't want late fees.
We actually can't afford late fees. 30 cents would be a ding on our food budget at this point.
Boo. Don't take it off. Don't take it away. Don't take it away. But you make us sound so sad and pathetic. And I don't want it to sound too pathetic as we make a plea for people to become members, sign up for membership, go to the site, and you get access to all our shows. That's 100 now bonus shows.
And you don't limit them, and they can listen to any bonus shows they want?
Yes. Well, wow. The only issue with that right now is I'm still uploading it. There's a few missing, right? I'm already working on trying to get those, but I need the internet to do that.
Yeah.
I've had fans being able to like connect me with Dropbox, and I've been meaning to download those and replace them because I would like to do a bit of a site overhaul. But like anything else, I'm like, you know the speed of things, guys. Besides, I'm going to keep providing enough content that you're not going to even need to go that far back. Do you honestly want to listen to me more than twice a week? This is what I'm saying. Like, you will for a short period of time, but after that, you're probably done. So go get 100 of those and listen to them much more slowly, and you're going to have a great time sort of like jogging and driving your car and being entertained that way when you sign up for membership. And that helps us survive, people. That's the way we make our breads. Definitely until I can actually finish posting and enough of the book stuff so that you guys will get behind that one. But again, I need the internet on that one. Mm-hmm. I'm having some problems doing research without the internet.
And remember to, if you guys have a couple minutes and you have an opinion about what shows are kind of the essential shows for The Good Atheist, make sure to go to the
definitely.
Website and on this show, or you can email Jake and
you
just
can
let
go
him
to
know.
Facebook.com/goodatheist, The Good Atheist, and you'll find us. We don't even have a number. We actually have a name now on the Facebook fan page.
You know what I think might be good is to actually do a podcast episode with the intent of putting it in the essential listening. So maybe you should do a podcast about the origin story of the podcast. Hmm? Huh?
Is that not too far up its own ass? I feel like, woo!
Well, maybe people can tell us. Is that something you guys would be interested in hearing about like the journey of The Good Atheist and why it's still going on and how long it'll continue and how Jake feels about it and blah, blah, blah.
I think that such a show would be available to download on request for those of you that actually give a shit. So I don't want to saturate people who don't care, but we can work up to that. And maybe that can be sort of like the cap on the whole essentials thing to listen to. Be like, well, that's the last thing.
Because it is a pretty interesting story about how you guys got started. And
it would be a long podcast. It would be like 5 or 6 hours of podcasting.
No, I don't think you could do that.
I would say the whole thing. Why not? Would people not be curious? I mean, dating back since 2007, there's been a lot of shit.
Maybe we could do it in a couple of parts where you can do like the early years and then you can
do... Yeah, that's true.
That would be easier because 6 hours. Oh,
I could do a whole book actually about the whole experience of what I've done just because it's changed throughout the years so much.
It has changed.
It has changed. And it'll continue to change. I have no choice. One of the things that I'm going to be bringing back, by the way, on this podcast is the notes section. And because you know what? Like, I stopped doing that for a little while just because it was too much, too much of a workload at the time.
Yeah.
But because I've been able to manage my time so much better, I want to reintroduce them because I think that they're necessary. Like,
for a while, weren't you guys trying to do segments as well? I remember there being a couple of segments and they were really good.
Well, they're...
The Ask God segment was pretty funny.
Ask God was really popular. I was, thinking about bringing that back, but it's tough, you know, you got to be in a funny mood. I haven't been in a very funny mood for a couple of weeks, so I would need to be funny in order to do those because a lot of that is ad lib, so.
That's true. Well, I think maybe that's something to think about, too.
Something to think about. Something for you guys to comment on. Please go to the site or go to the Facebook fan page is actually an easier place for you to comment. This is what I suggest. You don't have to go to the site. go to the fan page, like the motherfucking fan page, because I put a lot of content on there too. You go to the site if you want to read articles, and the best way to do that is just subscribe to the RSS. It's the fucking best way to get the articles. If you don't know what an RSS reader is, I'm going to hit you over the back of the head. And there's a bunch of episodes, by the way. Learn how an RSS reader works. And we have an episode, remember where we talked about all those blogs that people should subscribe to?
Mm-hmm.
I ended up putting a link to every single one of those RSS feed.
Nice.
You can have just all your news just in one shot. Like, I've already organized it for you, motherfuckers. It's
nice.
Out there.
Nice.
It's out there.
That's pretty awesome.
There you go. And you know what? That's only possible because of people who are contributing members like you. So become a member, please. And with that, I will catch everybody on Thursday for the bonus show. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Chris Hendricks.
Have a good Atheist Day, everybody. We're not even laughing, though. Ha 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 ha. Last time we were more joyful.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
You still low energy?
Coffee's helping. Coffee makes me kind of like.
So you'd be more relaxed. Okay, I'll try to imitate that mood. Here we go.